Welcome back. So today, we're digging into something foundational for how provinces plan getting around these 2011 draft regulations. They set out the minimum requirements for provincial land transport frameworks, the PLTFs.
Right, under the National Land Transport Act from 2009.
Exactly. And these aren't just simple plans. They're these huge interconnected blueprints. So our goal here is just to pull out the absolute core mission, what these PLTFs have to do, and maybe some surprising things baked into the rules from the get-go.
Well, the regulations make it really clear right up front that the PLTF has sort of a dual job. It's not just about documenting what exists.
Yeah.
First, it has to provide the strategic direction, you know, the overall vision for transport development in the province.
The big picture.
The big picture, yeah. And at the same time, it needs to give you a really honest, comprehensive look at the status quo where transport stands right now from that provincial viewpoint.
So assess the present, map the future.
Basically, yeah. It connects those two things.
And that planning vision, that's where it gets really interesting, I think, because these rules, they don't let transport planning just live in its own little bubble.
Mm-hmm. No silos.
Right. They explicitly say the framework must show land use development trends. It has to define the sort of desired spatial future for the province.
Where people should live, what jobs should be.
Exactly. And then detail the transport actions needed to actually support that spatial plan.
And that's key, isn't it? It makes the PLTF more than just an infrastructure list. It becomes a tool for shaping the province.
A mandatory lever for urban and regional planning, almost.
Yeah. The law forces provinces to think about how transport investment can guide growth. You can't really separate your transport strategy from how you want your communities to develop.
And looking through it, it feels like they built social and environmental thinking right into these infrastructure rules, which is maybe surprising for 2011.
Well, you see these principles that go way beyond just, you know, building the next highway.
Like what?
For example, the framework must pay due attention to developing rural areas. That's explicitly stated.
Okay, so not just focusing on the big cities.
Not just cities. Plus, provinces have to specifically consider non-motorized transport.
Which is defined as?
Anything not relying on an engine or motor. So walking, cycling, that sort of thing. And crucially, transport for special categories of passengers needs special attention.
Like people with disabilities.
Exactly. Persons with disabilities are specifically mentioned.
And this comprehensive scope, it's really driven home when you look at the mandatory chapters they list out in Regulation 5, right?
Absolutely. It covers a lot of ground. You need an executive summary, obviously. But then there are whole chapters just on public transport strategy.
Including rail.
Including rail and dealing with system problems, deficiencies, and specific plans for those special categories passengers we just mentioned, like persons with disabilities.
Wow. And there's more, isn't there? A chapter on non-motorized transport.
Yes, a full chapter on non-motorized and environmentally sustainable transport.
Environmentally sustainable.
Yeah.
So back in 2011, they were already requiring plans to, what, limit fuel use, cut carbon footprints.
The regulation mentions measures to limit fuel usage and decrease carbon footprints, yes. It's quite forward-looking, as you say.
And of course, none of this happens without money. There's a mandatory funding strategy chapter too.
Critically, yes. And it has to align the budgets with government cycles, specifically the medium-term expenditure framework, the MTEF.
Ah, the MTEF. So tying it directly to how government actually allocates money over those three-year cycles.
Precisely. It ensures the transport plan isn't just a wish list. It forces it to be a budgeted reality hooked into predictable government spending, makes it much more grounded.
Okay, let's talk process for a second. The PLTF itself is prepared for a five-year period. That sounds standard.
Mm-hmm.
But then it says it must be updated every 2 years.
Correct. Regulation 4 lays that out. Five-year lifespan, but a mandatory update biennially.
That seems demanding. Updating a massive five-year plan every 2 years?
It is. It essentially creates this internal pressure to keep the plan relevant, to constantly reassess. It can't just sit on a shelf.
And for you listening, this matters because these PLTFs, they're not just bureaucratic exercises gathering dust.
Not at all. They're meant to be the actual roadmaps. They identify what the province sees as problems or issues in land transport.
And they list specific projects, right? With budgets.
Specific interventions, yes. Often with proposed budgets and timelines attached. It's where strategy meets action, hopefully.
So ultimately, these regulations, even from 2011, were forcing provinces into this really detailed balancing act, matching transport plans, not just with budgets, but with future land use, social needs, environmental goals.
It's a highly integrated approach demanded by the law.
Which brings us to a final thought. Given that the framework is set for 5 years but needs that refresh every two, how does that continuous update requirement change the whole game? Does it stop transport planning from being a fixed policy document and turn it into something more like a living strategy, always adapting?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Maintaining that flexibility and responsiveness within such a comprehensive framework, that's the real ongoing challenge for the provinces.